With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Freeman Report with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Tuesday, the 30th of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And if you just joined me, I've been asking why Scotland has become one of the wokest places on earth with political and social commentator Lois McClatchy-Miller. I'm going to say it one last final time. What a fantastic name, Lois McClatchy-Miller. We had a really interesting conversation about politics in Scotland, the fact that it looks like there's the establishment, the whole political establishment there is in free fall, and whether that means a reset for Scotland. We've also been discussing the cruel push for the measles jabs with journalist and writer for the Conservative woman, Sally Beck. Really, really interesting conversation there. We talked about vaccines in general and whether any of them work, whether there's evidence for any of them working. We also talked about the MMR vaccine, whether there's any evidence that the cases of measles are up, even despite the fact that uptake of the MMR vaccine is down. Really interesting conversation there. If you have just joined us and you missed that first hour, it will be uploaded to the website in the next few hours. So just head over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button. You can also go over to the app as well and watch it there via the episodes button. And there you'll be able to watch and listen back to all of my previous shows. Okay, so in the next hour, I will be discussing the madness that is transgenderism with Dr. Simon Goddick. After he posted the front cover of a leading New York magazine on X that shows a trans man in nothing but boxer shorts. Now, in the photo, you can clearly see that the woman's breasts have been surgically removed and that a section of skin on her right leg has also been removed to create a penis. The photo is very, very stylized and has the following caption alongside the photo. I didn't need a penis to be a man, but I needed one to be myself. This, for me, shines a massive light on how mental illness and the medicalization of young people is being encouraged by encouraging them to take hormones and lop bits off their bodies. In essence, this is being glamorized. And how sick is that? The fact that young eyes will see this image and think it is normal, attractive even, a life choice. I'll go further and to say that I think this is evil and that the people responsible for this should be held accountable. And maybe they will one day. Although where a lot of this is going on, certainly the extreme forms of this in the US, maybe justice will never be done because of the statute of limitations. The period by which you have to bring a court case for medical mispractice is around 2 to 3 years. It does differ by state, but most states are either 2 or 3 years. So not much time really to figure out that the whole experiment that they've done on your body has left you with lots of injuries and put you in a lifetime of medicalization. Now, I wonder if that will change in the future and a class action will be brought against the corporate bodies and medical institutions pushing this evil on kids. It happened with tobacco companies that sold a lie to the company to the public. They told people initially that cigarettes were good for you. And they later moderated that message to say, well, they're not harmful. And of course, in the end, they were called out on that by lots of class actions. I wonder if that's going to happen. And rather than it being, I knocked my light there. Rather than it being about a specific medical case or somebody bringing a specific case, whether it would be a class action because of all the marketing that they're doing around this and the glamorization of all of these medical procedures. Yeah, it's a big one, isn't it? Because, you know, young people around the world are being told that taking hormones and having their sexual reproductive organs surgically removed and disfigured is a good thing, glamorous even. And that text, "I didn't need a penis to be a man, but I needed one to be myself," essentially packages up the message that surgery will make you feel at ease with yourself. It will make you feel more like yourself. It will make you feel happy. Now, if that isn't pure evil, I don't know what is, because it is crystal clear now that most of the kids who end up being sucked into all of this nonsense, actually most of them have mental health issues. And if they were addressed, would not lead to them being put on a medical pathway for life. The CAS review provided the evidence for this. Not that intelligent people needed that evidence, because those of us with half a brain figured this out a long time ago and can see the evil that is being manifested on our kids. In the first hour, I spoke about the damage the jabs have done to tens of millions, maybe even hundreds of millions around the world. Well, this is another public health disaster that has been pushed by the corporations and certain elements of the medical establishment and has been allowed to happen by our governments. And of course, let's not forget the United Nations. Yes, that organization masquerading as a force for good, because it is nothing of the sorts. Billboard Chris rightly highlighted that the UN is appointing people with mental health problems, with no medical training whatsoever, to give health advice to other people with mental health problems. One of the trans people that has been appointed by the UN to give health advice to trans people, no medical training, and they've got a history of posting about bestiality and fetish sex on drugs. Again, if that is not evil, then I don't know what is. But I am interested to hear exactly what Simon Goddard has to say about it in a moment. If you want to get in touch, please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, there's loads of you over at the moment, head over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper. Is there an update, Gemma, on that story of the man with the sword around London?
Yeah, unfortunately there is, and that is a 13-year-old boy has died as a result of the knife rampage in part of East London. This morning, in the last hour, Chief Superintendent Stuart Bell has given a press conference in Hynault in East London about what happened. He said that it wasn't a targeted attack as far as they could see. He did refuse to answer questions, though, about whether the suspect was known to the police and whether he had been arrested before. But they have confirmed tragically that a 13-year-old boy has died and his family are being supported by family liaison officers. Sadiq Khan has come out, praised the officers involved for risking their own lives to try and save others. Two civilians are still in hospital, two police are still in hospital with stab wounds. Sadiq Khan said that his heart is broken hearing the news of the 13-year-old boy stabbed to death on a quiet, leafy East London suburb in the early hours of this morning, just after 7 a.m. Additional officers have been deployed to the area, although police aren't linking anyone else in connection with this, and they say this isn't ongoing. They're not worried about any other further attacks, but additional officers are there. And interestingly, Sadiq Khan and the police have urged people to check their door cam footage. If they've got those doorbells that have security cameras on, they're urging people to look at that, and if they think there's anything there that could be classed as evidence, to hand it over to the police. Interesting, though, that the police won't confirm whether or not this was a person that was known to them. They certainly wouldn't confirm whether this person had been arrested before and had some kind of previous, which meant maybe he should have possibly been under much more closer surveillance. They didn't answer those questions. Obviously, the thoughts are with the family, and the 36-year-old man has been arrested. Not charged yet, but arrested. So, yeah, there is an update, but it's not a particularly great one, James.
Yeah, absolutely terrible, isn't it? Sadiq Khan, I looked at a post of him, I think it was in a BBC interview this week, where he was saying that he's made London safer, to which obviously I repost, you know, I did respond to that, and that's had lots of likes on X. Absolutely ridiculous this is now. I mean, this is becoming... you know, weekly, if not daily, occurrence at times at the moment in London. I'm just looking at the fact that the police are not confirming whether he was known to them kind of points to the fact that they probably did. He was known to the police, because otherwise, surely they would just say, no, he wasn't known to us. Maybe I'm jumping the gun there. Interesting that it happened at 7 a.m., Gemma, as well. It doesn't really have the hallmarks, all of this, I think, from everything that you've told me, of it being gang related, particularly given the police aren't expecting any reprisals, or they're saying, you know, this is kind of, it's just a, the impression I'm getting is it's a self-contained incident. Is there any information at all on the nationality or the ethnic sort of background of the person involved?
No, still nothing on that. And it is interesting, on the one hand, the police are saying that they're not linking anyone else to this. It's kind of done and dusted. A 36-year-old's been arrested. But then they're still deploying additional officers in the area. So, well, that doesn't quite make sense, does it? Why would you deploy officers in the area if someone's been arrested and the whole matter is now kind of closed?
I think they do tend to do that, because obviously when you get something like this happening, the public become very, very frightened, and some people too scared to come out of their houses. So they do tend to put a lot of police on the ground, just to, as reassurance to the general public that, you know, that it's safe to come out. So I don't think we could make any conclusions directly on that. The only reason I'm asking that question is because, of course, you know, we have seen, not just in the UK here, but lots of European cities, we've seen migrants, for one reason or another, you know, they've come to a country where lots of people don't want them there. There's not the resources. There's nothing for them to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, going rogue and attacking people. We've seen that in lots of places. So in the UK as well. I mean, of course, you know, we had I'm not going to try and remember the exact incidents, but there's been plenty of stories where illegal migrants and people awaiting their cases for getting settlement in the UK have gone. So it would be interesting to see what the nationality of that person is. But also interesting, you know, we've got an election coming up very, very shortly for the mayor of London. I really do think that people are voting in that election really need to pinch themselves if they're thinking of voting for Sadiq Khan, because he literally is gaslighting the nation. I heard him saying, you know, we provided houses. He's broken all of his promises, and he's been in office for quite some time. He's not built enough houses in London. TfL is in financial difficulties. Of course, you know, he said, we're creating a fairer London. Well, fairer for who? What about you, Les? It's a regressive tax, that is. It hits the people who can least affect it. And then his claim that he's made London safer. Well, you know, today's news speaks volumes, doesn't it, Gemma?
It does. And the images we've seen, which have gone viral over all social media, of this man, young man, wielding this huge knife, a sword, you know, it looks like some kind of machete sword. So that isn't a safe environment. And this is a leafy suburb of London. This isn't central London or areas in London where you might think crime is a little higher than average. And of course, I understand what you're referring to. Remember the stabbings in Dublin last year, where an asylum seeker, illegal immigrant, stabbed the teacher and pupil, tried to attack the children. That led to riots in the Irish Republic capital. I think, you know, should this be similar? Who knows what kind of scenes we'll see or reaction we'll get just days before the London mayoral elections. You're quite right. And also you're quite right of the inference being that the police remain tight-lipped when asked, well, did you know this guy? Was he known to you? Has he been arrested before? No comment. You know, silence speaks volumes. So either this is a man with mental health problems that was allowed to slip through the net, or there's something maybe to do with asylum and immigration, although I don't know if that part of London is where there are a lot of asylum seekers generally put, or migrants that have had their asylum granted generally put. I don't think it is high knot in East London, but I could be wrong on that myself. It's not an area that's massively familiar to me. I think we will have more detail on this story tomorrow, but obviously 13-year-old boy, you know, he's getting ready to go to school. He's got a family and their lives are all changed forever.
Absolutely tragic. And of course, I'm remembering as you're speaking about all this, those two students that were killed recently. They've been out for a night out and they were killed in an attack. Absolutely dreadful. I can't even start to imagine what that must be like as a parent or anybody who knew that young lad. So, yeah, clearly absolutely tragic. And our thoughts go out to anybody who's been affected by it. Gemma, thank you very much for that. I'm sure we'll talk about this more tomorrow. To the rest of you, we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Simon Godek. You know, that guy, he fled the Netherlands because the government there were persecuting him because he was speaking out against COVID. And where did he decide to go? The jungle in Brazil. No lie, he lives in the jungle in Brazil in a little house there. He's built a studio now, and so he'll be coming live from there in just a moment right here on TNT.
TNT's Jason Allborn.
In today's Australian newspaper, an horrific hit piece was delivered against Julian Assange with the headline, Assange's Sordid Tale of Treachery. It reads, Julian Assange is a criminal, a fabulist, and an undisciplined, arrogant, work-shy fraud who lacks an education while remaining a mannerless vulgarian. The WikiLeaks founder is no journalist. Well, that's Alan Howe taking no prisoners, himself a history and obituaries editor, deciding to write a 9-minute piece to basically pull apart a fellow Australian as he tries to get out of prison where he's been locked up for 5 years in maximum security for the work of being a journalist.
Weekends with Jason Allborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
You are about to hear
today's News Talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
Today's News Talk, TNT.
Right, now I've got a lot of time for my next guest. As I said, he famously ran away from the Netherlands because he was being persecuted there for speaking up against COVID and saying a lot of things that the government didn't like. And where did he go? He went to the Brazilian jungle where he now lives and where he's built a studio and where he joins us from now. Hello, Simon. How are you doing?
Hey, good morning.
Yes, good morning to you. Well, good afternoon to me. Good morning to you. Simon, how are you doing? You've been on the Freeman Report before, haven't you? But it's been a while.
It's been a while. I'm fine. I'm going to walk up like 2 hours ago. I've been to the chicken and I'm still wearing my working clothes. I was cleaning the chicken stable and getting some eggs. And I was just jumping to the jungle. I was like, oh, wow, it's 10 a.m. I have to go there. Just like rushing here.
It's pretty amazing what you've done. Just before we start talking about the things we're going to talk about today, just explain what your residence there is like and what your daily, you know, what does a typical day look like for Simon Godek?
I'm living in the Atlantic rainforest, so I don't have neighbors. I mean, there are neighboring plots, of course. There's always a neighbor, but I don't have direct neighbors. So I think the next neighbor is 15 minutes walking, which is quite some distance. And then the next neighbor again is like 5 minutes by car. So I'm living in the middle of nowhere. on top of the mountain on almost 5,000 feet. I have literally, my whole land is just forest, and I have some I think 5,000 square meters of land that, wow, I'm cultivating with greenhouses. I have fish systems. I have chicken. There are boars running around that we trap. So there, it's wilderness, and I have Starlink. So that's how we connect.
Yeah, thank you, Elon, for that. So you don't have do you have a supermarket or a shop near you where you can actually buy things that you can't grow yourself and make yourself?
Yes, it's 30-35 minutes by car to the next small supermarket. So it's quite a distance. It's not just like, okay, I'm going to get some milk or whatever.
Yeah.
So, it's quite a distance, but I mean, I'm growing the majority of the stuff I grow here. And of course there are local farmers, which are closer by, maybe 10-15 minutes, that have beef, grass-fed beef, fresh milk, raw milk. So I'm mainly getting my stuff from local people, or we do trading. So I have many sweet potatoes if the boar don't eat them, you know. And another neighbor of mine has many orange trees. They're like Bayana. They're called Laranja Bayana, and they're super delicious. So we just trade. I give them a box of sweet potatoes, and I get a box of oranges. And this happens with most people who live in this area.
Sounds fantastic, Simon. I'd love to come and visit you at some point and say hello there and come and see. Right, Simon, obviously we've got some topics we're going to talk about today. So studio, can you please put the first photo up, please? It's Simon, it's that photo that you posted. It was when I actually said, Simon, you've got to come on and talk about this photo. It's the magazine front cover, and I'll wait for studio to get it up, but we can start talking about it in the meantime, can we? What are your thoughts on that, given that it's a magazine? It's kind of a stylized, it's glamorification, and of course that quote that say, I did not need a penis to be a man, I needed a penis to be myself. What are your thoughts on this, Simon?
So someone sent it to me, and I was like, oh, I need to post this. I was just like asking, I think I was just asking my tweet, like, what? Because I'm a libertarian. So I think everybody can do what they think is good for themselves, for their body. But what I'm actually criticizing here is that huge magazines are pushing this agenda. So they try to make this normal, which is not normal. Either you're born with an XY chromosome or with an XX chromosome. It's that easy. So you cannot become a woman when you're a man, or vice versa. And what I find highly disturbing, of course, is that this becomes mainstream, and that more and more magazines and fact checkers or newspapers say, okay, it's totally fine just to change your sex. And they don't tell what's behind it. So most people who do it commit suicide within years. The hormone therapy is nothing that's good for your health as well. And I think there are other reasons behind why people don't feel comfortable in their actual body, that they transist to something else, and this is not addressed, so it's glorified. And this is why I'm posting this. I'm not making fun of this person. I think this person
himself
or herself or whatever you want to call this. But I think the glorification of changing sexes trying to change nature or biology is something very dangerous that we see not only in this case, but also regarding the COVID pandemic, the climate, etc. So something that is actually a fact, it's biology 101, is being changed. If you say like, hey, wait, let's talk about this, you get banned from social media. So this is something that I'm criticizing with my posts. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all very superficial as well, isn't it? Because, you know, in the photo, and one of the things we couldn't see on the photo there is actually when you look at that woman's right leg, you can see a big strip that's been removed there, and that's to create the penis. Now, the penis that's been created really is very superficial. I'm assuming.
Have you ever seen these fake penises? Have you ever seen a picture of it?
No, I haven't. No.
Look, I tell you, I've saw it like the first time 2 weeks ago. What has been seen cannot be unseen. I should put hydrochloric acid into my eyes, but it's really, it doesn't even look like a penis. It looks like a piece of rotten cake. I don't know how to put it, a pestle. I don't know. Just look it up. I mean, if you dare, if you really, if you like rotten, but don't, I mean, if you can handle it, don't. But it doesn't look like a penis. It doesn't even look close to a penis. So they remove part of their legs, of their tissue, to create this fake thing. So they have something in their boxes, but they can't do anything with this. You know,
that's my point. Like, so it's all very superficial, isn't it? And of course, it's, you know, I should imagine youngsters that are looking at pictures like that, they don't know all about that. They don't know about all the medical problems potentially that you get after this. Now, you rightly said, Simon, that a lot of people that do transition then later go on to have an awful time of it, whether that's medical problems or some of them commit suicide. So I guess the question I would ask is why more cases are not being brought in the US. But of course, we've got the statute of limitations there, which means that you can't, you know, if you're going to bring a medical case, medical malpractice, it needs to be within a 2 to 3 year period, depending on which state you live in the US. Do you think there's a potential in the future, just like the tobacco companies? They weren't actually sued in a class law action for necessarily on individual cases for people who got cancer, but it was about the fact that they told people cigarettes were great. You know, they said cigarettes are actually good for you at the start. Do you think there's a potential that we might see class actions in the future like that?
Difficult, because you have to think these tobacco companies were private companies, and now we have actually the government pushing this agenda, and a class action against the government is something that, I don't know if there have been successes in the world, but I think it's rather a global woke movement we are against, and not just like a interest group, private interest group, just like big pharma or tobacco or the military industrial complex. So this is something totally different. And many docs who are really doing these procedures, they believe that it's the right thing to do, even though they don't look at the data, just like COVID. They didn't look at the data, and this time again, they don't look at the data. They don't see, if I do this, what is going to happen the next 5 or 10 years? People usually commit suicide. So why is this not mentioned?
Do you really believe that? I'm sure that there might be doctors that don't realize, but I'm pretty sure that the surgeons that are doing this kind of stuff, that are doing lots of it, because there are in some states in America, it's a huge industry, billions of pounds. Yeah. And, you know, I've had guests on, and you know, they will go back to the surgeon, and the surgeon's trying to fix the problems they've created. In the end, they've cut them off after that 2 to 3 year period because of the statute of limitations. They know that there can be no comebacks. So, yeah, I'm not sure I would be as forgiving as you and think that doctors, I think they must know. But it's big money, Simon. Now, Simon, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to look at that first photo that was shown of Macron and the German Chancellor with their wives. I want to get your opinion on, I mean, obviously the implication is that they're not really women. You know, we can debate that, but I just want to get your opinion on, you know, do you think it's by accident that we've got so many world leaders that I think we can say with some degree of confidence that they're not married to real women. They're trans women. Anyway, we're going to take a short break, Simon, and I'd be really intrigued to hear what your thoughts are on that right after this break on TNT.
Here's the news.
TNT Radio News. News.
Matt Boylant here with a look at your TNT headlines. Hardline Israeli ministers have slammed a new ceasefire proposal put forward by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Former US House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has snapped during a live television interview after the host corrected her claims about Donald Trump. Hunter Biden is preparing to sue Fox News, and a review of White House transcript has found staff have had to correct President Biden's public remarks 148 times over the past 4 months.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Right, let's see if we can get that photo up now, please, studio. So the photo you put up first. That's the one. There you go. Simon, you posted this recently. Explain what the photo is and your thoughts.
So I think I was making a tweet and I was like, okay, these are the German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, and the French President, Emmanuel Macron, with their wives. What do you notice? So actually, the fun fact is the replies are totally different to what I was thinking. My thoughts were like, wow, yeah, yeah. So I don't think that Olaf Scholz's wife is a man. Macron, a different story. It could be. It could be, you're likely. But this, his wife is just, looks very male and is, let's say, not pretty at all. And I was looking into, actually, if you look at the European leaders, they all have wives which don't look like female. I think the last Western president had like a pretty wife was Trump. And all the others have like, I don't know, without insulting someone, ugly women. With Macron, of course, it's totally a different story because I think she was his teacher. And I think he was like a teenager and she was like in her 40s or even older. And they've been totally wrong. It's totally immoral.
It's interesting, isn't it, with her? Because I think researchers have she says that, I think it's something to do with a brother or something, but essentially there's a point in time where there's no history of her before that. And then the man in question, there's no history after this point of time. So, exactly. And there's been a lot, but I guess the thing is, and you know, when you look at the photo carefully, that photo, you know, you look at the hands, you look at the, it does appear that they're men, but I think the thing is, Simon, there does seem to be an awful lot of chatter. Obviously Obama is the other one, and Michelle or Michael, whichever you want to say. So Big Mike, that's it. So the interesting thing for me is, you know, I guess, where is all this coming from? Is this some kind of psyop distraction for us to keep us all chattering? You know, if it is, why? And if not, then why are we seeing so many leaders potentially? Do you think it's by accident?
No, I think to get into this position, you're already a mentally different person. Most of them are narcissists. If you look at Trudeau, for example.
If
you look at Macron as well. And I think if you're already a narcissist and if you're like already a mentally weird person who is just like focused on power, you already have other preferences, to put it in that way. So I think it's if you take a normal based centralist person, you would just be a normal wife or a normal partner. But in that case, especially also Trudeau, it's super weird. His focus on the, what do they call now, 2SLGBTQIAA+. I tried to learn it on my, like, the ad.
The alphabet gang, I think, is the way to put it.
Exactly. It's like a letter soup with some numbers. So they're just adding numbers and they're celebrating this mental, can I say mental illness on TNN? But to me, it's TNT, sorry. But to me, it's like mental illness, this, especially the 2S part and the I. Okay, LGB, we can discuss. And the rest to me is just like super odd. Saying this as a libertarian, actually, I should say, okay, I accept everything. Everybody should be as it is. But this movement, as such, to me, is also a danger to the Western world.
Simon, the reason I asked if you thought it was by accident, because one of the things that I've kind of thought about and questioned is, you know, we know Macron, we know Trudeau, and others have been selected. So have they been selected because they have certain lifestyles, because they can be controlled? Because of course it's all secret, isn't it? Yeah,
it could be. I mean, if you look, they're almost everybody from every country's cabinet, also Mark Rutte in the Netherlands. I think he's not the prime anymore. Baerbock, the foreign minister of Germany, they've all been global leaders and they're all super weird people, especially Baerbock, who doesn't even speak a proper sentence of German. She's German, right? So they're very weird people being selected. Yes, they are selected in a way that, of course, the populace, the people in the country can vote for them, but they're already pre-selected. So that's called the pre-selection. Of course, they're countries with different outcomes, for example, in Argentina. But in general, they're are powerful groups who look who will be in favor of our interests, and these people are pre-selected or put into power. They get medial focus, so people get to know them, so they can be elected afterwards.
Yeah, and of course, for those of us who believe all of this in the first place is, I believe there is something called transgenderism, gender dysphoria. I think it's very, very rare. In terms of the number of people who suffer from it. But of course, if you want to create a psyop, which I believe the rest of it is, in order to damage society, to damage our values and our principles and our communities, to attack the family, all of these things, then I guess you need to select a leader who's going to be, yay, go for it. That sounds like a great idea to me. Maybe that's the way around it is. Simon, we've got a couple of minutes left. I'd just like to ask you, what are your top five things, I guess, that are going on in the world that most worry you at the moment?
Oof. I think top one is the NATO. It's heavily trying to put Russia into a huge conflict. So many people say Russia invaded Ukraine, and but you have to go back in history and you see actually that NATO started the conflict. I think this is number one. Number two, I think, is omega-6 fatty acids. So it's vegetable oils, processed foods. So what actually the industry makes us put into our body, causing many inflammations, causing us being sick, and like omega-6 fatty acids, like these vegetable oils, seed oils, whatever you call them, they actually are the root cause for most Western diseases. So they're not good for, of course, for our health. And of course, there's this movement of childhood vaccines, of mRNA vaccines. In Brazil, for example, it's if you don't give your baby a COVID mRNA shot, you get excluded from Social Security, which is fucked up. Yeah, so it will happen in other countries as well. And then it's, I think, digital currency. Central bank backed digital currency there, so we will not be able to pay with cash anymore. They will control us 100%. And number five, I know, I think it's wokeism. It's called wokeism, the general wokeism.
Interesting, because I think we're very close. So I had number one, world war. I think that's what I'm most worried about. Second, I had medical mandates. That's been a huge thing and really, really damaged many, many people across the world. Of course, you said foods, and foods, I think, is actually just as big a problem, you know, all these ultra processed foods, mRNA vax. I think now my number three was actually digital IDs, then CBDCs and food security. I think we're agreeing on certainly the top one there, which is, what NATO are doing and the potential for war. Simon, thank you so much for coming back on the Freeman Report. Now you've got your studio up and running, and you can do shows from there. I do hope you'll come back soon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Simon Godek. Thank you. Right. Okay. We're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking all about COVID with US scientist and writer, Dr. Kevin Bass. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat. A chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams. By ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. Prediabetes does. One in three adults has prediabetes, but with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. And you can change the outcome. Take the 1 minute pre-diabetes risk test today. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org.
The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. Okay. So we're back to COVID. It does seem actually that, you know, I listen to other presenters on TNT. And of course, I know exactly what I talk about on the show. It does seem we're starting to talk about COVID and the vaccines more and more. But that's because of the fact that, you know, we just heard the court case where AstraZeneca has been forced to admit that its COVID jab does cause blood clotting issues. And you know, we're hearing from other parts of the world the argument and things starting to emerge. So I am wondering whether we are on the edge of this becoming much more public, all of the damage that's been done. So we're going to stay on COVID now, and I'm delighted to be welcoming Dr. Kevin Bass, who's a scientist and writer. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Kevin.
Thank you so much for having me, James.
Now, Kevin, let's just start. I've read a little bit of your work, but just for the viewers, I wonder if you wouldn't mind, I guess, summarising your stance on what's happened over the last 4 years. I mean, you can talk about whatever you want, but what is your kind of conclusions over what's just happened in the last 4 years?
I think through a conglomeration of a pharmaceutical-oriented approach to the pandemic, along with ideological blinding and biases among the public health and medical establishments, they've gotten pretty much everything systematically wrong about the pandemic. Their censorship policies on so-called misinformation and disinformation made it impossible for people with alternative points of view who are marginalized by these establishments to provide course correction or to provide input that could help to guide and help the policies be navigated to be more rational than they were. And so through those two sort of aspects of things, we've gotten the pandemically systematically wrong across pretty much all of the issues.
And in your opinion, do you think what you've just described there, do you think that that is just a consequence of a novel virus coming along that no one was prepared for? And it just happened that, you know, things just went badly wrong and nobody wanted to admit that? Or do you think there's something more sinister afoot?
I don't know if I'd necessarily say sinister. I know that whenever people say that it was a novel coronavirus, we didn't know what to do, that's a lie. So we had decades of pandemic preparation. We had experts in this field who wrote about this kind of thing extensively, what we do in the next pandemic. We had these things called pandemic games where public health officials, government officials would get together and pretend that there's a pandemic over the course of 1 or 2 days and decide, like, they would do sort of an accelerated version of the pandemic. They'd make decisions about what they're going to do during various different parts of how the pandemic would develop. What they would do during those pandemic games is often very sound. It made a lot of sense. It was consistent with a lot of what the critics would say, like Jay Bhattacharya, Sunetra Gupta, Martin Koldorf, some of the more prominent critics of the COVID policies coming from the World Health Organization and from the CDC. And that was all thrown out the window starting in March of 2020, once the pandemic started to happen. It wasn't markedly different from anything that we would have expected. Yet, nonetheless, we threw all of that preparation, all of that expertise out the window and followed a radical ideological approach to the pandemic that came from China. And I think it's still somewhat of a mystery why that happened. I know there's many theories that circulate about this, but for whatever reason, we jettisoned our expertise, our scientific expertise, and we followed a radical ideological policy.
And how do you think, you know, we've seen all of these emails from Fauci. We know that gain of function was banned in America. And because of that, Fauci and others moved that research over to China, to the Wuhan lab. How do you think that fits in with all of this?
The whole pandemic origins, the way that was handled was absolutely catastrophic. So at the very beginning, when the virus is unleashed upon the world, many of the people in the know who knew what kind of research was being done in the Wuhan lab, including Fauci, including many of the top virologists in the world, they got together and some of them said, you know, we think that this looks like a lab leak. Some of them in private were like, this looks almost certainly like a lab leak. Fauci and some other major power brokers who were involved with funding, both in the UK and in Britain, then got together with these scientists and said, you know what, we need to head off the conspiracy theories. They had private conversations, they had back and forth. And within a couple of days, suddenly the story that it could be potentially a lab leak had completely reversed. It started being called a conspiracy theory. It started being said that a lab leak couldn't have all been possible. And the bottom line, the fact of the matter is that Fauci was deeply involved in funding the laboratory in the Wuhan. People in the UK who were involved in trying to shape this narrative were deeply involved in that. In all of that, we're talking millions and potentially billions of dollars of NIH funding and Wellcome Trust funding in the UK that could be jeopardized if it were found out that there was a lab leak. And so many of the people involved in shaping that narrative who were in power had a lot to lose by it being a lab leak. Now, we still don't know 100% for sure whether it was a lab leak or whether it came from animals. My own personal belief, especially looking at some of the genetic data, I think it's overwhelmingly looks like a lab leak. It seems almost impossible, given the molecular footprints on the genome of SARS-CoV-2, that it came from nature, in my opinion. But the fact of the matter is powerful interests who had a lot to lose shaped and suppressed the question in such a way as to favor conclusions that fit and that supported their personal interests. And that is corruption. And that's what happened around the lab leak question and what continues to happen with some of the obfuscation about it.
Yeah, now I know, Kevin, a lot of people in the live chat, we've got a lot of different opinions there, but one of the opinions there is that actually there was no novel virus in existence. I don't necessarily buy into that, but I do buy into the narrative that I think a lot of the people that were killed in those waves of COVID were actually killed by the protocols put in place to treat people, whether that was ventilators. And in the UK, midazolam and morphine was given to a lot of people. They used several years worth in the space of a couple of months. The other question that's never seems to be addressed also is, where did flu go? Where do you think flu went across that 2-year period, Kevin?
I don't have a good explanation for that. I know that once COVID came around and we started seeing a spike in COVID cases, suddenly there was like no flu for several years. There's different theories about that. Some people think that COVID was basically flu and it was diagnosed as COVID, but it was actually flu. Other people think that maybe people got COVID and this made them resistant to the flu. I don't have any strong scientific opinion on what happened there. It is an extraordinarily interesting phenomenon that really needs to be addressed and answered. And until it is, it's a gaping and very important scientific question for sure.
It's huge, isn't it? A huge question that strikingly huge, given that nobody is really sort of addressing that, where the flu went. Now, Kevin, you've written quite a lot on the harms that were done by lockdowns. I think you've argued that there's lots of evidence for those harms, but there's no evidence at all that they did anything. Unpack that a little bit for us.
I think it depends on the specifics of the country. So some countries were... I think lockdowns violated human rights. They certainly, I think, were unnecessary. I think they were unnecessary. In some countries, they didn't do a lot of harm, though. If you look at the numbers coming from New Zealand or Australia, your country, for example, I know that they're intolerable. I know that they, again, violated human rights. But I think different countries had different socio-political vulnerabilities. And a country like, say, New Zealand or Australia didn't have as many. But whenever you look at a country like the United States, I think, which is a very volatile, right now it's quite a dysfunctional country. And I think there's other countries in the world that are also having a similar sort of situation. Lockdowns precipitated a lot of social unrest. They made certain epidemics in the United States much worse. The opioid epidemic. I know in the UK, it made alcoholism and alcohol deaths a lot worse. There's a lot of recent data coming out now that things are far worse than even scientists anticipated that they could be as a result of people excessively drinking. I think that the lockdowns precipitated this is a little controversial, but I think it's the data bear this out completely. They precipitated the Black Lives Matter protests over the George Floyd in 2020. Those were sort of displaced lockdown protests. That's where the energy ended up going. And that resulted in this depolicing that happened in the United States, which resulted in a lot more deaths among poor minorities in the United States. That's not according to the reigning left-wing ideology, but if you look at the actual numbers, we have an unprecedented spike in deaths among poor Black people. And so depending upon the sort of socio-political vulnerabilities of the country and the way that those countries responded to the lockdowns, you have different harms in different countries. But I think that lockdowns sort of exacerbated those vulnerabilities. If you think about taking a medication in a single person, if you have certain health problems or certain baseline illnesses or predispositions, one drug might hurt somebody a lot more than somebody else. And I think that that same thing is true for lockdowns in large sort of political bodies. So
I think for me, and I think there's a discussion in the UK at the moment, look, as adults, it's done a lot of damage. There's a lot of people in the UK that still haven't gone back to work after being paid to sit at home. But I think it's generally agreed now that the damage was just done to children. I mean, my son, for example, he was sort of 13, 14 going into the lockdown, or maybe he was 12, 13, somewhere around there. He used to go to Scouts, all of these clubs, out-of-school clubs. Of course, then COVID came, all of that was cancelled, and now he just hasn't got back into it. And that has changed his trajectory in terms of his social development and everything else. And there's lots of stories of that. Is that being talked about in the US at all, the damage that's been done to children's development?
I mean, this is one of the good parts about the post-pandemic discussion. One of the only good parts is that I think we're acknowledging in the United States that lockdowns did have significant harms. They were a net negative. They didn't reduce transmission by much or at all. They didn't reduce deaths, anything like that. But they had these massive effects on children's language learning, on their social and emotional development. There's an epidemic of mental illness among young people that's gotten much worse since 2020 as well. That's probably closely related to the lockdowns and the school closures. And so I think in the United States, we're having a good discussion about that fact. And we're seeing that the school closures were a pretty bad idea. And I suppose that's one good aspect of that discussion.
Yeah. Do you think, because my feeling is in the UK that if we had another virus similar to COVID, that and the government tried to lock people down again, there would be a proportion of the population, I think, that would quite happily be locked down again. But I think it's a lot smaller than we saw with COVID. And I actually do think that we'd see a lot of people openly defying it and taking to the streets. We might even see civil unrest. What are your feelings in the US? I mean, I know it's a big country and varies, but overall, what would you say your thoughts are on the US in terms of that question?
I think that's true. I think in the US, people are much more privy and more informed and organized in case something like that happens. Nonetheless, it is also the case that our institutions haven't learned much at all, or at least they don't show much indication that they've learned anything. If they have learned something, they're keeping it secret because they don't want to get into any trouble for what they've learned. And so it's very concerning that the World Health Organization, that the CDC, in many ways, I think, are doubling down on their former policies. I know in the UK, if I'm not mistaken, the health minister, who's I think Matt Hancock over there, I think whenever he was questioned about this, his apology about the lockdowns and about the COVID policies was actually, we should have done things sooner. We should have done things harder. Sorry. I'm so sorry for all these deaths that I caused by not being more of a lockdowner than I was before. And that's very concerning language. But I do think that you're right. There is a more organized resistance and more awareness that these things are a problem. So we would have to see, I suppose.
Yeah, Kevin, I don't think the public buy what Matt Hancock says. We've had lots of leaked WhatsApp messages across government. And I think that argument, because they did try and double down. And of course, you know, many of us suspect that was in preparation for this pandemic treaty from the WHO. We have actually only got about a minute and a half left, but I do want to get your comment on that treaty. What's the political situation at the moment? Do you think the Biden administration is just going to sign whatever treaty is on the table?
I don't know what the politics are as far as what the Biden administration is planning to do. That's not something that I'm super aware of, but I am very concerned about what is in the treaty. It gives preferential treatment to China. It's the second biggest GDP country in the world, yet it calls it a developing country. So it gives it special privileges, special rights as being a developing country. I think that's consistent with China's outsized role in World Health Organization, in that organization and in funding as well. I think that it's still very strident about misinformation. It tells countries to tamp down on so-called misinformation and disinformation. But we know that was a huge problem during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And in the treaty, it was supposed to give 6 months after any change in the treaty before ratification. And the problem with that is that they are still changing it up to the very date of ratification, which is an abuse of that provision that's actually in the treaty. It's not following its own.
Kevin, I'm going to have to cut you off. I'm incredibly sorry. I'm going to have to cut you off because we are out of time. Dr. Kevin Bass, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Kevin, for coming on the Freeman Report.